public outcry for people who want a better planet. And there are powers that be that let their people panic. Look at the Gulf of Japan, could they have really planned it? Heading for the iceberg like the Titanic.
Atlantic mystery, Atlantis right from history. The truth about the pyramids and ancient Mayan prophecy.
Space Odyssey, look into the anomalies, and you will find suppression of free energy technology. A false democracy born out of a monopoly. Sacred knowledge robbery, like the towers they toppling.
No stopping free.
Jay Bray, Lido C.
Coming from the enemy.
Free energy. The oil's running dry. Our money's burning out.
Solar panels on the roof of the White House.
Hey! We bringing on some real change.
Water catchment system.
We collecting rain.
Together round.
Oh boy, here I am. I'm just washing my potato, hoping everybody else starts washing their potato. You're listening to the 100th Monkey Radio with Tom and Ramon, and we have a special treat for you today.
Yay!
Yeah, I'm watching the consciousness of the planet continue to grow, and with everything that's going on, with all the way the sun's kicking up and all the different flares it's throwing off and the different energies that are coming in, and it's just there's so much going on right now, and it's happening so fast. It's kind of hard to keep up with at times, don't you think, Ramon?
Yeah, there's many, many things going on. Some of the stuff that I don't know, like, I always send us email, let us know what any of you guys are feeling out there or seeing, what you know, what your thoughts are. Our email is info@thehundredthmonkeyradio.com.
Yeah, we put a little note up there on the webpage that we're kind of looking for your stories. If you're interested in sharing your story, because each one of us has a story, and each one of us adds value to the whole. So if you have a story, something that's happened to you, something that you've experienced that you would like to share with others, please don't hesitate to get a hold of us, and we'll chat. You know, I like hearing other stories. There's always something in there for me personally, as well as for others. So, we also have some of those, first season, little monkey gig sticks still available. So if you are interested in having all of our shows, the first 61 shows from November 17th, 2010, all the way through 2011, drop us a line and, we'll get one of those headed your direction.
Yeah. And also you can get in contact with us, you can subscribe to Tom's YouTube channel. If you scroll down on the homepage, you'll see it. Facebook, Twitter. Are we still doing Vimeo?
Yeah, we're still doing Vimeo.
Okay. And Vimeo, which I have to put that one up. Well, it should be up by the time this comes up. But I want to also thank all 105 countries. I'm still flabbergasted that, you know, 105 countries. How many countries do you have left to go?
Oh, what, there's another 130-some or something like that. What do we have now, 238 or something like that in the world now?
Yeah. But we only have one planet, so far.
Yeah. And we are only one race, so.
Yeah. Also, my book should be available in several weeks. I'm waiting for the approved copy before publishing it. And that's called Scratching the Cosmic Consciousness, which took a little bit of time to write and put out. But
and then, and the bumper music you listen to, and
yes.
You'll be able to hear in the second hour, the full versions of that was Free Energy by the Luminaries. If you guys have been following the show, you've heard this song before, but it is extremely appropriate for this show that we are doing today.
Yes, and speaking of, who do we have? Because I think who we have, I won't say much because I'll let you do the bio, but the a legend. In this field.
Well, I'm going to start off with, I was poking around on his website and found a, a, a little creative piece that was there, and we'll start off with that. And the death of a planet. Our children are crying. Hear what they say. Don't take our tomorrow and throw it away. Our planet is dying because you don't care. With your misguided science, you've polluted our air. You cut too much forest for monetary gain. The ground is so thirsty, no trees and no rain mean no rain. You've poisoned our oceans with filthy refuse. Our fish, many are dying, though through senseless abuse. Is this the inheritance you old ones will leave? You are stealing our birthright, for this we grieve. We'll have no tomorrow unless you take heed and cease the destruction you've caused by your greed. So list our crying and hear what we say. Give back our tomorrow. Take heed today. Stop your pollution before it's too late, or we'll have no future but share the same fate. Professor John Searle was born in England on May 2, 1932. John Searle experienced recurring childhood dreams that led him to design a revolutionary electrical generator fueled only by rotating magnets and large disks that emulated the flight characteristic displayed on many UFOs. It's said that the first Sunday of every month between 1968 and 1972, Searle demonstrated his generators and flying discs to the general public. Television cameramen and news reporters were supposedly present for the events, and Searle claims he also demonstrated his flying discs to the U.S. military. Professor John Searle, how are we doing today?
Busy as usual. Struggling to get information out there, struggling to push the work forward to the marketplace.
Well, yeah, this is an absolute honor to have you here, and the technology that you're working on bringing out to the to us is just absolutely amazing. I've been following your progress for a couple of years now, and I'm absolutely fascinated with magnetic fields and the way the potential they have for really freeing us from this fossil fuel dinosaur that we've been existing with for the last 100 years.
But it's the thing, Tom, what people don't realize, the effects of the SG have been known since the early 18th century. Scientists were demonstrating the different effects. By the late 18th century, the movies were actually using some of these effects to excite the viewers in their movies. The technology was proven by the physicists, scientists, but they couldn't put it together. That was an electrical problem which they couldn't solve. Unfortunately, I had to come along and solve it for them.
So let's give us for those listeners that we have that may not be familiar with you or your story, would you give us a little bit of background and how you came into working with the different magnetic fields and or the whole electrical systems that you – how do you get started in this anyways?
Well, it started with dreams as a young boy. And there were two different dreams, but related. The first dream really gives me the mathematics of this, how to work out the technology, and also that it deals with a mass of energy in a much smaller concept. The second dream was on the flying side. And it kept repeating twice a year and for 6 years. Then the first part of the dream came into effect. The dream said all the children I knew would disappear. It wasn't the children who disappeared, it was I who disappeared as I was sent down to the naval school. Now, up to that point, I did not know nothing about mains electricity or flush toilets or running baths or showers. So going to the naval school, I went into a complete different world to the one I've been in. Yet, that never did anything to make me understand the dreams. What happened was, on leaving the naval school, I was put into a job. And that is where things started to happen. It was in the electrical field, apprenticeship in electrical, to become electrical engineer. And during my first couple of days, I went to stores to collect cables we needed for the job. And then I happened to look at one of the dockets, and it was this two and this little two above the top of it, the back. And I asked the foreman, "What is this?" He said, "Two squares." I said, "Well, what is two squares?" He simply just saw two squares and another two underneath, four squares. I said, "Well, surely there's some value." "Oh, no, no." So that is what started me to work on the squares. The dream was always squares, a hopscotch. Always squares, three up, two across, another one up, two across. Eight squares, always. The precision of the dream was always precise. So somewhere here in the squares was some solution, and I had to find it. And that's what started off looking at the mathematics. And when I got to square three, lo and behold, that actually could be turned into a uniform motion. So could four do? Because what the dream is saying to me is cross over into four. Four is the square you've got to look at. So I looked at it, and in the end, I found out it could be done. And then I noticed that it's actually a cube. You've got six sides, but only one side fits the dream. Only one. And I call it the law of the squares. And it's the way the diagonal from the left bottom to the top right steps. It has to step in the value of three, like 3, 6, 9, 12, in that sort of configuration. That is the line. That was the secret for the SUG, for you to make it. So that was the key. My job then taught me all about Ohm's law and all these other bits and pieces you need to know. But it's that mathematics as a baby, you could say a young boy at school, that was the secret to lead me to this technology. And a good landlady, let me tell you, that landlady, she did more jumping in the air than any other woman I know. She was absolutely free of rheumatism. She would say, I said, "Well, switch the power. You sure you won't blow the fuse?" "No, no, that's all right." But bang! "I thought you said you would blow the fuse." "Well, it shouldn't have done. I have to find out why." She was Welsh, but she was a damn good woman. She was so excited about the things I did.
So what took you to the point where you developed the first, well, I don't know if you called it an SEG back in the 60s.
No, we had a little, which the Japanese told me, nobody remember that. You had to use a nice, easy name with your name in it, of the inventor. So they suggested the solar effect generator, SEG for short, would be simple for everyone. And of course, we made that change in 1968 so that it was easy for people to better say. But what actually happened was, of course, in the right place at the right time and in a loving accommodation where the landlady was excited about the things you were doing. That was the secret of success.
So she was supporting what you were doing 100% then?
Oh, yes. She couldn't wait to see what next. Oh, one day I came home from work. She was laughing her head off. I said, "What's the matter?" She said, "But I tried to clean some cobwebs out of that unit there, and it threw me out the window." I said, "Thank heaven the window was open." I said, "You don't know how lucky you were."
So you built the originals at home then?
That, well, we machined the parts at work and then took them home and then pressed them together with a small hand press and then tested the results.
So what I know you had some publicity back in those days.
Had a hell of a lot.
What happened to all the I'm sure that there's got to be some form of tapes out there and videos or whatever from all the coverage that you did get. What's happened to all that?
Well, most of mine got destroyed to stop me from the work. But there are lots of visitors who took, in the old days, the old clock wind-up movie cameras, what was it, 9.6 or something. They would film. Now, I think the reels last about 2.5 minutes. But there are, must be lots of videos out there stuck away in attics, forgotten, because they haven't heard of John Searle. Well, that's a strange thing. Most people think I'm dead.
Hmm.
They're surprised when they see me. You know, they said, we thought you was dead. I said, you know what thought it, but he had him when he checked.
One of the things I'm really amazed is I always heard on the internet how your education was more from just looking at the natural world.
That's correct. I learned more from that than I learned from school. Well, I'm deaf, clinically deaf, and therefore Berkshire was one slang, Suffolk was a different slang. Never heard Suffolk slang. I just couldn't make sense of it. So they considered that I wasn't trying to learn. And for some reason, the teacher thought the best way to help you to learn was to down your pants and give you a good spanking. But I didn't find it made any difference in my remembering.
Can you give us an example of how nature can, because some people would like to actually want to learn from nature. Can you give us an example of how you learn from nature?
Well, let's say what my condition was. My condition was that everything related to the sexual parts of the body was evil. And, you know, so when you're watching things, you record what you see, but you dare not ask questions about what you see. But I was looking at the fact, pigeons, we had the pigeons, they always laid two eggs. There were always one male and one female. Then I asked myself, why does dogs have litters? For? Why do cats? Why do a human being only have one? There must be some reason. And it's this reason I was searching to solve. And you know, the whole thing fascinated me. Why can some things fly and others can't? Why do we see things all different? There were so many things I had to look into. But in the process, what I learned was that for my work I want to do, the best color light to use on the shell of the craft is a blue light flashing 4 times a minute. It can be recognized with ease by the human eye coming in from space. And that's one. Second is we found that the internal pressure, the temperature of 170 degrees Fahrenheit was the best temperature at 7.5 pounds per square inch pressure. This, the brain worked beautiful. It was not stressed in any way or form. So through experimenting, I learned the best thing to do. And then, of course, the SUG, the question was, it kept taking off. So in the end, I said to myself, we better decide the body is sick on it if it wants to fly, because it's no good up there doing nothing. And that's why we worked. That became the key publicity. That brought in a mass of publicity every day from 1968. For the 2 years, I had to then say, stop, we can't get work done. I'm spending too much time, 10 hours a day before camera. That means I'm stumped to get on with the work. But it was a long process. I went from job to job. Each job taught me by hands-on experience how this was done and how that was done. So the question was, I always got in the right place for the information I needed. I did not have to buy a book. But regarding how the SDG worked, there was no books. I'm writing the books.
Yeah, it's I find it absolutely amazing the way this world works and the universe works. It when you have a question, like you said, you end up in the right place at the right time. The answers always come to you, especially if you're working on, or the questions you have something to do with the benefit of mankind.
This is it. And you know what people don't realize, many of the great changes in our thinking, the scientific thinking, was done through dreams. Most of the changes, there were drastic changes in our belief, came from dreams. And this is another case where the dreams are going to be the reason for the future change. Let's face it, it's got to come. We are desperate for clean energy, clean transport, better food, healthier air, better water, cleaner water. We are so desperate for these things. A change has to come. We have to find the answers, whether we like it or not. And I'm doing my part to try to develop, well, I consider it the most wonderful machine I've ever heard of, because not only does it produce electricity for you, it uses all that waste of stuff around you, convert it to useful energy, which no other machine does. And the next thing is, it's more healthy in the room, because the dust I've found over the years falls to the ground, and you just vacuum it up. And healing, I know from my own experience, being in the explosion, it's very quick indeed. And pain is cut down very quick. And these things are just simple little things of what we say we always want to have. Then you look at the flooding. There's no excuse for this type of flooding. This technology don't have to be man. It could be unmanned. It can intercept oncoming storms and reduce the amount of the storm out at sea so the land don't get flooded. And where there's no water but there are clouds, you can go and break that cloud up. So there is water in that area. There's a lot we can do today. It's not a question, can't do it. We can do it. Amen. It's just that people don't want to put the money in to get it done.
Right. Plus it shakes up the current paradigm of the fossil fuel stuff. Yeah. So we are recording this on March 11th, 2012. Which it's the 1 year anniversary for the Sendai earthquake. And the Fukushima issues, all the radiation that's over there. Now I have heard that there is one of the anomalous effects, or maybe not so anomalous effects, of the SEG and that type of technology. Has the potential to help with the radiation problems we're having over there.
Oh, yes. Let's face it, I've written to presidents of America many times in the past about building the large miracle that could be, don't have to be man, it could be unman, that could be directed to any event which is dangerous to life. Intercept, like this case, radiation, because you've got a large enough generator and you go into the radiation, it neutralizes it. It takes 5-10 minutes, but it will neutralize it. And that, I think, is worth the cost of the craft itself. Surely, the craft, it will do it time and time again. It's not one-off. You can repeatedly use it for any case. Cases like volcanoes, that's a lot you could do. You can slow down the flow of the hot material coming out from it. And that gives people chance to get away. That's another thing. Then, you see, it's not just what we call earthquakes and things. That such craft are so useful because, A, they don't cost nothing to run. Once you build it, A, that's it. And you can move it anywhere. You can land it anywhere. I don't know what the hold-up is, why we're not getting down to develop it. NASA wants a transport system for the International Space Station. They're playing with rockets. Why? The cost of a rocket. It would be more than develop this craft as a transport, or so we say a bus service to the International Space Station, daily, to and from. To me, that makes common sense. Absolutely. Why you got to wait for a window just to go there? The poor people could starve waiting for you to deliver goods to them.
Yeah, I don't like to go in. We don't like to do a whole lot of the conspiracy theory stuff on our show. But there seems to be some agenda behind the scenes that's not publicized, that to keep all these different technologies from coming to the back to the surface.
I think it's profit.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, petroleum is it the number one business in the world? It's a multi-trillion-dollar business, so of course they don't want to lose that. And I don't know if you know, I'm actually here in Japan, about 2.5 hour drive from Fukushima. So, I mean, it's really important to me. And to for those listeners of ours here in Japan, that, you know, as technology comes out, because I mean, go ahead.
I agree that wind power and solar cells are a fill gap, to fill a gap, but they're not the permanent answer.
It's a very frustrating in the way things are being done here. There's a lot of red tape when it comes to things, and their ideas are, you know, let's come up with a better nuclear power plant, and it's like, no, you don't get it.
Of course, they're looking at profits making. This does not create profits. It's not intended to. What it's intended to is to make a better world for everyone, better conditions, better health conditions. That is its intention, not the intention of how much money you can suck out of people.
Right.
It is what a better life you can give them.
And that's that right there is the intention of what Ramon and I are doing with the show also here. And also what Bradley Lockerman, who is also with us on the chat tonight, is doing with how he is helping you to with the publicity and the videos that he's done and everything. Bradley, welcome to the 100th Monkey Radio.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Ramon.
Who's Let me give fella? You a quick, yay!
Thank you. Who's that fella you have on? Is that Professor John Searle?
That would be Professor John Searle. You don't happen to know him, do you?
Oh, hello, John Searle.
Hello, Daddy-o.
The young man.
So what I wanted to touch on briefly is how this message is getting out to the world, Brad. We are... you know, you almost have to dig for this to be able to get this information. And have you seen anything here recently as far as more interest and more people climbing on board and really looking for this stuff?
Well, indeed we have. And one of our endeavors, I met John in 1994 in Estes Park, Colorado, and we had a very large film crew up at the Stanley Hotel. And after a day off shooting, I met John Searle in the lobby, and he told me one of the most intriguing and powerful stories I'd ever heard in my life. Of course, he's given you a little bit of that here. But it was from that point forward that I said to him, gosh, I'd like to be the one that brings your story back to the world. Now, of course, he was so very well known through the 60s and 70s, even earlier than that. But it was time to bring this forward. Now, what we noticed, myself and a couple of people around me at the time, what we noticed is that he was a little bit out on the peripheral, so to speak. And when he spoke in front of a crowd, he absolutely enthralled every crowd that he spoke in front of, whether it was a conference or a meeting, et cetera, et cetera. But what we tried to do, guys, is bring him into a realm of possibility and probability, and especially over the last 7 years, to get it into a situation where it's no longer talking about something that's way out on the fringe or far too exotic or far too out of reach, but something that is predicated on simple physics, a simple situation where you can take layered elements, there is a charge present, and if that's the case, all you need is to put these components into motion, and you will have simple induction, the way John Searle says, relating to James Clerk Maxwell in 1873. So we've been, I think, successful to a large extent in bringing him into a realm of possibility, probability, and bringing the debate into a situation where people now can challenge, but not so much in the exotic sense, but in a very real sense involving the movement of electrons, perturbation theory, and the quantum Hall effect.
Hmm. So, Professor Searle, would you explain what perturbation theory is?
Well, in this particular case, I think
it's the movement.
I've got to get out to the people.
Yeah,
I cannot see the people got the education. I'm shocked. I'm horrified that simple things I say they don't understand.
Yeah,
and it's. I hope Bradley will get to help in videos to get that out to them.
Yeah, and I kind of throw these around. Perturbation theory, it simply means which part of an atom can move. And Searle has stated since he began in 46 that it's the electron that moves. And the electron can move through solid substance between the lattice of the atoms. This has been known since 1920s, about 1927 or so. So perturbation theory is merely the expression of electrons moving. A certain number of electrons will pass through solid material. So Searle's been saying this forever.
Hmm. Again, I tried to explain every few years, add another statement of facts of the SEG, because I find if you give them a lot of stuff at any one time, they're lost.
Right, right.
They're down tools. Oh, he talks a lot of old crap. And they're no longer interested. So I have to give it to them in little doses. And I just recently added another new statement to the list of the effects of the SUG, how it works.
And that is what your newest statement?
It is that the SUG really is nothing more than an IC, an integrated circuit, whereby every roller is a switch, and every roller is what we call a single pole, single throw roller. It's a switch, an analog switch, and as it moves, it switches on and off, on and off. And it is behaving exactly as an IC does. It switches on. It's a purely a switch. 66 switches all working together to get an output to the coils or slip ring, whichever the case of the collection system is. It's a simple device, but the thing is, it's the mass that is critical. And secondly, it's a new window in science. You cannot go to the shop, buy some magnets, stick them together, and think you've got an SEG. It just don't work.
Right, right. So if people want to follow around and poke around and see some of the things that we're talking about, I would suggest you go to www.searlsolution.com. There's just an abundance of information there. And that's something that also has impressed me about your work and everything that you guys are doing, that you're documenting everything every step of the way and putting it out there for people to see and follow along your progress.
Well, they can see the equipment we're getting. They see it's installed. They see we're training staff to use the equipment to make the parts of the SEG. Now, I don't know anybody else that making claims that they have produced or selling these alternative energy devices doing the same.
Right, right. So where are we at with the development of this and getting it out to a point where it's ready to be mass-produced?
Well, I think Bradley is in a better position because he's always going down to the lab to film what's going on.
Yes, I will. In fact, Searle Magnetics in Southern California was set up back in October of 2010, and it's been a very gradual and very humble lab and office space that has built up to an extent that we are indeed moving forward with the initial phases. And this was all built on four pieces of hardware. The demonstration units that Fernando Morris has set up, in particular the demonstration of the sine wave, which we did back in 2005 in Scotland. Then, of course, the rollers moving around a plate, which told us that they can indeed move and they won't move 180 degrees and then stick. And then one of the most fascinating ones is the demonstration of the eddy currents, that the roller does indeed have a magnetic repulsive field with a non-magnetic copper drum. And we can put that in your hands, guys, when you come down to visit, when you feel that repulsive force. We've taken that to several shows and demonstrated it, and it really is a fascinating thing because we know copper's not magnetic, but if you spin it in a certain way, you're going to feel that spin in your hand with one of the rollers that we have. And the last one, of course, is that wire demonstration that shows the actual flow of the electrons in the toroidal field that Searle's talked about for some 60 years. Presently, there's a restructuring going on, and the movement forward next is to find the emissions, which is the presence of the boson on the outer parts of the components. So it's moving along quite well. There is some expansion going on, and we're quite thrilled.
So you said, what is the boson? Real quick.
Boson is a paired electron. Usually one will spin left and one will spin right, but the boson is merely a paired electron. And, John, you want to go into that a little bit, the boson?
The beauty of well, we call them negative ions, coming together, which normally is not the normal thing they do, but they do in the SEG. That means you've got the electrons, well, forming into a uniform fashion, like a queue of soldiers marching in pairs, and they are forced through the SEG to the collecting coils, which means that the force that goes into those collecting coils are like heavy stream of water, very powerful jet of water, extremely powerful. And from the first plate, we know from measurements at the lab in Germany that it will produce 3,500 volts. That just from that first plate. But there are three plates. The next plate, being much more mass, means that we have over twice as much energy there. Then the third plate is even greater mass, means that we have at least four times more energy. But the first lot is fed into the second lot, which bangs that up. And what you've got actually coming out is the part that your grid line, and you have to drop that down. All because the negative ions will pair up. That's the beauty. If they just out of power, a pair up, then we wouldn't get that amount of power out of it.
Hmm.
So the pairing is a critical issue.
Hmm.
John, let's say I have one of these here on Earth, and I have another one, let's say Mars. Would I be able to also use them for communication because you're pairing all these electrons?
Oh, yes, yes. You would get very clear communication because you, from there to here, you've got no ripple. And if you've got no ripple, you shouldn't get no hum.
So this would be instantaneously?
Oh, yes, yes. But you've got to have three plates. As you realize, the roller is moving very fast. The roller from the discharge point one to the next point is too short. So you've got to have a lot of power behind it to load it again in that gap. So you do need an immense amount of power in store to keep those front rollers loaded all the time. So you've got nice, constant, non-ripple energy output.
Hmm. It almost sounds like there's some form of a quantum effect that visible there.
Oh, indeed.
There's no noise. No noise. You've got no smell of arcing or anything. It's nice and quiet. And we anticipate it should run for centuries.
Yeah, and to Tom's point, what we're talking about here is a simple layering system where the internal layer is a rare earth material. And what we know about the rare earth material is the outer valence shell has two spare electrons on the very outer shell of a single atom of that rare earth. Those two electrons can be stripped off in very easy fashion. With a magnetic field, they can be stripped off. They pass through the second layer, which is a gate layer. That's very specific in its design. The gate layer essentially lines up those electrons as they pass through. Again, we're talking about the perturbation theory, those electrons moving from center to rim. The third layer is the magnetic layer. The magnetic layer is that which activates, draws those through. But then when they reach that layer, they also accelerate into the emitter layer, which is the fourth layer. So essentially you have what would be simply called a capacitor sitting there holding charge. Now, as those electrons move through, they are taken from a random state in the center to a uniform state at the rim, and they pass through each component part and each of the layers of the three stages of an SEG until they're at the rim where they're collected with simple coils. Is that right, John?
That's correct, yes.
Hmm. Hmm.
And so the concept is simple, but to make it is very difficult.
Yeah, and the important thing here, guys, is that if you have a capacitor in a static state holding charge, all you need is motion to get that charge out. Is that correct, John?
That's correct, yes. Which, of course, you see, number one, how simple it is to make that weight move, where the experts would say they would fall off, and if they move, they'll shoot off. Good God, we've seen them shooting off like lightning and being mass-produced as fast as they were shooting off, if what they're saying happened.
Yeah.
Because they're still the same number.
Yeah,
stopped it.
And let me jump in there because that's kind of amusing. what they would say about the rollers, and you can see that in the mock-up demonstration, that those rollers at one point or another are going to fly off. Well, obviously they don't fly off, so what are they doing, breeding new rollers? So that's kind of a joke with us.
Yeah, I mean, I've watched that, the rollers rotating there, and I'm you know, I'm thinking centrifugal force, and I'm thinking, you know, well, I don't know what each one of those rollers weighs, but those things are traveling at a tremendous rate, and I'm just like, okay, how in the hell is he keeping that in there? Is it creating a kind of a shell type magnetic field there?
Well, not so much. It acts just like the Earth and the Moon. The plate is the Earth, the rollers are the Moon. And if they were brought up to the same mass and size, the rollers would roll around at the same distance as the Moon does around the Earth. The same laws apply.
So yeah. The Lagrange point type thing.
Yeah, Tom, what you're dealing with there is a radial magnetic field and a vertical magnetic field. So that roller, as it's spinning around, wants to pull away with the centrifugal force. However, there is an equally strong force, which is the magnetic, in a radial form. And as that roller moves forward, that radial is strengthened. Is that correct, John?
Yes, yes.
So the magnetic fields never fall out of coordination. What you get at the rim of the device is an eddy current that lifts that roller, so there's no friction. That eddy current is comprised of billions upon billions, trillions upon trillions of electrons. It is actually a charged face, and that face lifts that roller about 2/1000ths of an inch. And at the same time, you have a radial magnetic field that's pulling it to the center. And those two forces equate. So that roller is permitted to spin at tremendous speeds. John, what's the RPM of the center of the inner ring and inner roller set? What's the RPM?
Normally, we start it for normal house would be 200 revs per minute idle. But when you start draining power from it, that speed can shoot up to 45,000, even greater, depending on how much flow of electrons are moving through that system.
Wow.
So it's the drain from the system that determines the revs per minute.
Hmm.
And the best of it is the demand that sets the velocity of the rollers that gives you that output.
Wow.
Now, from the early days when you had this machine running, did you ever see any effects where it would change, like a better word, it would change dimension or almost seem translucent?
Anything that moves at high speed tends to lose weight. Anything that travels at immense speed. Well, does it tend to lose weight?
Well, if I may jump in here, John, describe when the disc begins to really rev up. What would someone looking at it see? The colors and
yes, it colors. It, you know, the trouble about this technology, which people don't realize, is that you're raising the internal energy to a very high level, and then you're discharging it, but it don't quite all go to ground. But what comes out of it is photons, and it's the level in which you drop that power from gives you the color. So depending where you stand and the rate those rollers are moving, that will define what the color you see. Normally on ground, you won't see nothing because the amount of electrons are not sufficient for your eye to see it. But once you start speeding up, you will see the color. The photons are trapped in the magnetic field around the rim of the craft, which is like a donut. And this is what you actually see. It's not the air can ionize, as the scientists stated in the 60s who watched the demonstrations. There's no air between the rim and four, but depending on, of course, the size of the diameter, anything up to a yard from that rim. All you got in there is this magnetic flux, which is trapping those photons. And when the photons bump together, they go back to negative ions and go back to repeat the circuit again. So you're not burning nothing. You're not creating anything. You're not destroying anything. You're compressing what's there and pushing them back. But you're using the spare electrons in the system to kickstart the system. And once it kickstarts, the surrounding fabric keeps it fed.
So is it creating sort of a vacuum within that field?
Yes, yes. Yeah. On the domestic one, because the power is high enough to get the vacuum there, but you will feel it's gone cold.
So temperature within the field drops also then?
Yeah, because more electrons have been drawn in than going out. And therefore, the electrons are being compressed closer together. They've got less room to move, therefore less effort to make heat.
So, you know, I know that a lot of the superconductors that they use right now have to be done in extremely cold temperatures to make them really efficient. And so you're basically, I'm seeing a superconductive type field being generated then.
Yes. Yes, this is what I love. I've done film clips in the past, which showed you the segment pointing out that the experts are trying to find a material that will be able to produce superconductor at room temperature. We got ones here we're using all the time. They go superconductor if we don't watch it, and then they will lift. And this is the point. We had shunning, but we still, well, I haven't just now, but we'll be back again, I hope, into the same condition we were in the 60s. We would then again have the superconductor technology again in our hands as we had in the 60s, which they're still hunting for.
Well, we've rapidly run through this hour. We've just got a couple more minutes here before we're going to take our break.
I feel like we just scratched the surface, too.
Oh, I know we have. We have just barely scratched the surface here. Brad and Professor Searle, if you would like to leave us with a parting statement in this first hour and put out the information where people can get a hold of all of your material and the websites and places where people can contribute in some form or fashion, or what are you guys looking for in the lines of contributions and support?
I leave it to Brad to answer that one, as he's on the hot seat.
I need an SEG here to cool my seat.
Oh, there we go. I want one in my backyard to power my house. So,
you bet.
Here, here.
Yeah, the fastest, easiest way to learn about John Searle, of course, is to go to johnsearlestory.com and look at the film. It's a 109-minute documentary. The more intensive information is found at searlesolution.com. My favorite website is still swallowcommand.com. That's John's personal website with very in-depth visuals and John's writings. In fact, he's currently writing a new book, which I think is out over 300 pages now and will probably stop somewhere around 500 pages. And the last best thing that we have right now is for those people that do want to donate. There is now NorthPointCharity.org, which is a collection of different technologies, but one in particular that we favor, of course, is John Searle and the SEG. But NorthPointCharity.org is a nice place to go if you feel like you'd want to contribute to this, because it, of course, is a place where someone can make a donation in the donation form. We've never been able to do this before, but because of North Point being aboard now, you can go in and donate to a myriad of emergent technologies. But, of course, the favorite one is the SEG John Searle, the Searle Effect Generator.
So what are the plans for production when we've got this all figured out and everything developed and ready to go?
Well, it should be a very broad sharing of this technology with the entire world. Because there are different laws in different countries, different grid systems, different utilities. And what I think we need here, and I know John and our team concurs, we need a gentle paradigm shift. And I think that serves the geopolitical system right now. People are generally scared right now, let's just face it. Right. There's a lot of fear and trepidation about what's happening, where is it going, and everything seems to come back to energy. Where is it coming from, how are we going to get it, and how will we deliver energy? So that these emergent technologies are becoming more and more viable just in terms of providing an answer. And some of the more exotic ones, well, fine, you can probably check them off with a very small amount of research. But a stronger situation based on where new energy is coming from, like the SEG, would be something I think that would cause a gentle paradigm shift. We want to share with the world within their laws and within, again, I repeat, this gentle paradigm shift, so that even the fossil fuel crowd that knows we have a limited situation there will come on board with this kind of shift, as opposed to a competitive, aggravating type of paradigm shift. Something more gentle, I think, would work better, guys.
Right. I think there's a win-win solution out there, and something like this could very well play a very large part in it.
Indeed. And if people go to northpointcharity.org, that's something they can do, and they can do with small amounts. So we welcome that.
Great. All right. Well, I want to thank everybody for listening to this first hour, and hang around here on BBS Radio and check out Dr. Brooks Agnew after us, and then pop on over and check out the second hour with Professor Searle and Bradley Lockerman on www.thehundredthmonkeyradio.com. Condemnation without investigation is the height of ignorance.
And the love you deny is the pain you carry.
Okay, we'll see you guys all in the second hour.
Public outcry for people who want a better planet, and there are powers that be that let their people panic. Look at the Gulf of Japan, could they have really planned it? Heading for the iceberg like the Titanic.
Atlantic mystery, Atlantis wife of mystery, the truth about the pyramids and ancient Mayan prophecy.
Space Odyssey, look into the anomalies, and you will find suppression of free energy technology.
A false democracy born out of a monopoly, sacred knowledge robbery like the towers they topple in.
No stopping free.
Jay Bray, Vito C.
Coming from the enemy.
Free energy.
The oil's running dry.
Our money's burning out.
Solar panels on the roof of the White House.
Hey!
We bringing on some real change.
Water catchment system.
We collecting rain.
Time to gather round.